Have you ever been in a toxic relationship? If so, stay tuned because I'm going to be talking to toxic relationship specialist Sarah K. Ramsey. Hi, welcome to this episode of Mind, Body and Relationship Maze. And today I've got the real pleasure of speaking to Sarah K. Ramsey. Sarah K. Ramsey is a toxic relationship specialist, life coach and NLP master practitioner who helps amazing women remember how amazing they are after enduring the pain of a toxic partner or parent. She works with women who've experienced toxic relationships and who remain stuck in a cycle of pain and confusion, transform their minds and lives by taking back their power, recreating a life that they're excited about living and bringing renewed energy, clarity and excellence into establishing careers and relationships they love. Her podcast, Toxic Person Proof, has been ranked in the top 5% of podcasts globally and was rated the best podcast for getting over your ex. Her work's been featured in the Emotional Abuse Recovery and Resilience Summit, Healing Narcissistic Trauma Conference Medium, Thrive Global, The Elephant Journal, and The Courageous Woman Summit. So, Sarah, it's great.
I've been busy. When you put it all together, it's like, oh, I've been busy.
Yeah, it's great to have you on this show. And so welcome. And thanks again for being here.
So happy to be here. Sometimes a relationship can feel like a maze, right? That's what we want to get people through it in a way that they can feel vibrant and alive and happy to be alive again, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That was the whole idea, which glad it's getting across. So tell everybody a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Okay, so I did not grow up thinking I was going to be a toxic relationship specialist. I can assure you of that. When I really even started the coaching business, I thought it was going to be, I called it bounce back coaching, right? And I was fortunate enough and unfortunate enough for my life to fall apart very publicly, very drastically. If I felt like I was in a maze, right? And the job was connected to the family, connected to other people's families, connected to my friends from forever ago, you know, and it just ended up being a very much a maze and it all fell apart. And the lovely thing about when your life is falling apart is you can start to take risks that you wouldn't take before. You can start to solve problems that you wouldn't have solved before. Because when you get out of that people pleasing, it's like, well, lots of people were disappointed with me. I lived through it. It's okay. I'm still here, right? So it's like, I didn't die, right? Nobody died. And I don't mean to make light of it. It was very serious. I was very, really thought if I was good enough, then other people in my life would be happy. And I thought their unhappiness was a result of my lack of effort or not trying hard enough or not knowing what to say or communication issues or something along those lines. So I kept trying harder. And now I call it smart girl syndrome, right? Which is I'd never met a problem I couldn't solve. So if I just worked harder, I could solve the problems of my relationships. Okay. Yeah. And I miss the fact that these were not relationships that should be solved. These were not relationships that should continue. These were not relationships that were healthy, right? And I ended up being in a situation where it was very controlling. Right? Because here I was, let me work harder. And the other people would say, well, I think you need to work on this, but now you should work on this. And it was so exhausting that I was driving my friends in the States, North Carolina, no prescribed medications, no alcohol, no drugs, no, completely sober, legally and otherwise, and just stopped driving. Like I was driving the car, blacked out, let go of the wheel, with three of my best friends in the car. And luckily we didn't have a wreck and they were like, Sarah, what happened to you? And I knew I was going to have to change, right? The people pleasing was actually killing me. You know, trying to make these people happy was actually killing me. And it was one of the greatest decisions I ever made to say no more.
Yeah. That's an incredible story. And it sounds like you've been through a real journey yourself. And I think having that journey yourself makes such a difference when you're working with other people who are facing challenges themselves. Because, you know, a lot of the time, if we want to work with somebody and they've never faced a challenge, you know, major challenges in their life, It's like, how do we have confidence in them? But the fact that you're so open to kind of express that and share that, I think is a really wonderful thing and can really help the people that you work with.
One of the things I say is I'm raising my hand, not pointing my finger. Okay. Because I say some really hard truths. It's really hard for women to distinguish, and men too, you know, what is their fault and what is not. There were certain things that I needed to take responsibility for. My need for their approval, I had to take responsibility for. But there were also things I was getting blamed for that were not true. So it's a very important distinction. Like, okay, I'm not blamed for everything because that wasn't true. But there's certain areas I really need to build my self-responsibility in and take a look at myself in the mirror, but also not own what everyone else is trying to dump on me. And that's a maze, right? Like, that's a whole process of trying to figure that out. And so sometimes I do give a lot of tough love, but I say, I'm raising my hand, not pointing my finger, because I just remember being there.
Yeah, and I think that's such a powerful thing you're saying, is like, when, what do we need? What should we take responsibility for? What is something that is not to do with us? And I think when you mentioned one thing to do with trying to make some other people happy, it's always remembering that, you know, we are really responsible for our own emotional well-being. Is that, you know, at the end of the day, we can't make somebody happy. It doesn't mean that we can't, like in a relationship, we want to try and help meet each other's needs, but at the same time, you know, we can't make that other person happy. If they have problems themselves, it's, you know, there are things that they need to work on as well. And I think that's that came across in what you said.
So I describe it as a way, there's some people who have like a hole in the bottom of their love bucket, right? So they have this bucket, and you pour water in and they say, not good enough. And then you try to like mix the water with Kool-Aid. And so then you're pouring Kool-Aid in. Then you try to mix it with coffee. Then you're trying, okay, I need to do 2 cups. I need to do 4 cups. I need to work harder. And the problem is there's a hole in the bottom of the bucket. It's not the way you're pouring it in the bucket. Okay. And if you have ever been in a relationship like that, people are probably like, whoa, I know exactly what she's talking about. Me and my husband, it's nothing like that. You know, I do try to make him happy, and it's in a very appropriate way. It doesn't feel like an exhausting cycle of never good enough.
Yeah, absolutely. And because it's that balance, and it's always a balance in everything. It's a balance between, you know, we want to do what we can for our partner to be happy, but at the same time, it's not about making ourselves miserable or kind of blaming ourselves if they're not happy. So it's finding that balance between, you know, doing what we can to help meet our partner's needs and at the same time make sure that we are having our needs met as well. So I'm just, yeah.
Well, you talked a little bit when you were on my podcast, Toxic Person Proof. We talked a little bit about, you know, just that self-responsibility and independence, right? And that in a healthy relationship, there's togetherness and independence. And it's that ebb and flow. You know, one of the healthiest ways to have relationships with people is for my husband to not have any expectations that he's like the meter of all my needs, right? Many times if I have a bad day, I call a girlfriend, talk to somebody, and so then I'm kind of like processed through and washed before, back when I, you know, people used to leave their houses before COVID, but you know, I would like have something happen, call a friend, talk to somebody, come home, and I'm like clean and ready and emotionally like, okay, I've done my little reset. And then I can, you know, talk to my husband. Sometimes my husband's my reset, right? Sometimes he is. And that's healthy. But it's like, oh, we put all, like people talk about finding their person. It's like finding their person. And that doesn't mean that other person is responsible for filling in all your needs. That's not a healthy relationship. It's codependent relationships, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's such an important point. And so what are your when somebody says they're looking for their soulmate, what's your kind of reaction to that?
So I say, look for someone who suits you, right? Healthy relationships are about people who suit you. Some of my top things are being very responsible, having independence. I like what I do. Someone who's not, I don't even know if I want to say this on the recording. Bear grace with me. Threatened by like my achievements. right? You know, I've had a lot of successes in my life, which I'm grateful for. If someone is trying to make me small in that, or make me not as successful, or make me, you know, sabotage me in some ways, that it's like, pick a fight with me right before something important was happening or something along those lines. Like, these are obviously things that I need someone who's okay with me being successful, and someone who also wants to be successful, whatever that means to them in their world, right? Those are important things to me. And those are things I know that suit my other people. They are more, they have different personalities than me, right? Things that would suit them. They may want to be needed a little more than I feel like I need to be needed. You know, I have a friend and her husband says, I can't live without you. I don't know how I'd make it without you. And I look at their relationship. I was like, I don't know how he would make it without you either. Like, I don't know how he'd make it without you either. And that's what she wanted, right? That is not what I wanted. And it doesn't make my husband better than her husband or her husband better than my husband. It's finding what suits you.
Yeah, I really like the way you put that. So yeah, absolutely. And I'm wondering, because when you talked about the challenge you had yourself as well, when you were driving in, I think did you say you kind of blacked out? Or?
Oh, yeah. I just like let go of the wheel. Like, it was terrifying, yes.
And I think that one of the things that I think a lot of people face is when they do go through a challenge in their life, how do you find the resources to get through that? Because, you know, some people, if they face something like that, they almost kind of give up, or they never date again, or they kind of get stuck in this thing, think like nothing's going to get better. Just wondering, how did you find those resources, and how do you think other people could find the resources to get through that?
So I'm really big on leading by example. We talked a little about that even, you know, at the beginning, when it's like finding someone who's been through your situation, right? So leading by example, okay? When other people look at, when I get to the end of my life, I don't want people to say, man, she was really good at helping other people be selfish. And I'm thinking I'm being selfless. I'm thinking, oh, I'm being caring. I'm being selfless. I'm being forgiving. And it's like, no, when I get to the end of my life, I want people to say I knew how to take turns, and I surrounded myself with people who knew how to take turns. And I don't want to live a life where I helped other people avoid their own growth work, avoid healing, be selfish, feed their addiction of anger, feed their addiction of whatever. That's not what I wanted my legacy to be. And when I think about people wanting to lead by example or people looking up to me, it's a matter of integrity. It's a personal integrity for me. And it is not within my personal integrity to help spread darkness. And if I give up, I'm spreading darkness.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Insights into Teens, a podcast series exploring the issues and challenges of today's youth, talking to real teens about real teen problems. Explore issues from braces to puberty, social anxiety to financial responsibility. Each week, we talk about the topics concerning today's youth. We look at how the issues affect teens, how to cope with these issues, and how parents, friends, and loved ones can help teens handle these challenges. Check out our video episodes on youtube.com/insightsintothings. Catch our audio versions on podcast.insightsintoteens.com or on the web at insightsintothings.com.
Yeah, that's a very sort of powerful metaphor in a way of how you kind of how you've kind of phrased that. And because you with a lot of your work, because you're a toxic relationship specialist, is that right?
Yep.
Yeah, that's the term. So how would you help somebody identify somebody that might be a potentially toxic partner, or, you know, if they're in the early stages of dating, or, you know, what are some of the signs that define, you know, a toxic relationship for you?
So I really want to go back to the early stages of dating question, but I'll define a toxic relationship first. So we all have bad days, right? We all have bad days. We all do things that are imperfect, but there is a drastic difference between a dog who bites you once and a dog who bites you daily, right? And we talked a little bit when you were on my podcast about the 1-2-3 rule. Like, the first time it's a coincidence, the second time it's worth taking note, and the third time it's a pattern. And I do have a 3-strikes-you're-out rule in the dating phase, not with somebody that's been in your life for 10 years, but pay attention to the pattern. And in a toxic relationship, the pattern is not always bad. Sometimes the pattern is them trying to get you back. Sometimes the pattern is, oh, I'm sorry. Here's a perfect example. I had a client and her guy stole money from her. Okay. And instead of paying the money back, he offered to buy Christmas presents for her children. Okay. So he didn't do the right thing. He wanted to be the hero and swoop in and look like the good guy. He was not the good guy. Right? Yeah. But if she's in love with this person and has given him 3 or 4 years of her life, that's really hard to wrap your head around. Because he's like, well, no, he loves me. He's trying to do right by me. No, he's trying to get back in your good graces. Right?
Yeah.
So it's really important to know when people take responsibility, like take responsibility for their actions, take responsibility about making things right. And making things right is not gifting you. It's a classic story, you know, somebody cheats and they send flowers, right? It's like, oh no, he loves me, send flowers. No, that doesn't make up for cheating, you know? And if someone has an anger problem, the solution is for them to work on their anger problem. If someone has an addiction problem, you know they change if they're working on their addiction problem, and there's a different pattern.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And then kind of going to, because we were so in the early stage of a relationship.
Yeah. So I think about the term, that's weird. Let me say one more thing. Okay. If somebody you know is in a toxic relationship, okay, or they say they're in a toxic relationship, and it's like, well, he's saying it's toxic, she's saying it's toxic, he's saying he's a narcissist, she's saying she's not, like, you know, all that kind of mess, which I'm sure you've dealt with in 20 years as a psychotherapist, okay? I ask who is getting the better end of the deal of the relationship, okay? Typically, one person makes the rules, one person breaks the rules, one person enforces the rules, and they get to be the rule keeper. And the other person's job is to follow the rules, okay? Mm. So this person's getting a much better end of the deal of the relationship.
Yeah.
Okay? And that is something people can see on the outside. It's like, well, who's really running the show? Who's really in charge? And they could be in charge through finances, in charge through victimhood, in charge through, there's so many ways for someone to kind of hold all the power. Mm-hmm. But if someone holds all the power, they're, and then they're calling the other person toxic, but the other person has been like their servant all these years, that is super unlikely. You know, it's more likely the person who's not getting the good end of the deal finally saying, I've been putting up with this stuff forever, and I'm just now, you know, going to do something about it. Unfortunately, in that case, if, you know, go back to the dog example, if you've been getting bit every day for 10 years, it may look like you're the crazy one. Right? It may look like you have horrible self-esteem, because at that point, maybe you do. It may look like you're like, why is she saying all this? Or why is he saying all this? Why are they doing all this? You know, at that point, they're very spun up and they're very in an emotional state. And then the person who was making the rules, breaking the rules, they're like, they seem more solid and stable because they've been getting their way for 10 years. Right? Yeah. So that's a really important distinction, because I know it's difficult. It's like, well, they're both saying the other person's crazy. How do I... And it's often the person who kind of looks like, maybe at that point, that they're more sad, more depressed, more anxious, more broken. It's often because they are telling the truth.
Yeah, such an important thing. And because you find so much in controlling relationships, or if someone's in a relationship with a narcissist, the person who's controlling, or the narcissist, will start to blame the other person, try to make them feel responsible. And they end up feeling that they're the crazy one. And
right.
I said, this is a, you know, what we call projective identification. So one person, like one partner who maybe doesn't get angry much, but the other person says, you know, why do you get so angry all the time? And the other person isn't getting angry, but the person who's blaming the other person for anger has this internal anger that they never kind of express. So then they kind of almost force on the other person to become angry. So it's a huge thing.
And that's why it's so important. I remember I was talking earlier and it was like, okay, I want you to accept blame for some things, and not blame for everything. And that's exactly that example is why that distinction is so important, because to just say, okay, it's my fault, I'm going to change, it's like, oh, gosh, that's not the whole truth. And to say, well, nothing's my fault, I don't have to change anything, it's like, oh, that's also not the truth. But often the things you need to change, and I needed to change, are not the things people who are trying to control me told me I should change. Because they were saying I should be more giving, more forgiving, work harder. No, I needed to step back and ask them to do their end of the work of the relationship. But with the dating thing, go ahead.
No, I was actually going to just say that. So,
so within the dating conversation, because this is so important, right? Because, and this is not just a conversation about dating. This is a conversation about, should I go into business with this person? Should I let this person watch my children? Should I whatever? And if you really pay attention, this is so much, my book Toxic Person Proof is coming out in February, 2021. And this is what I talk about, like that gap of like, okay, come on. If we, like, when we look at a red flag list, most of the time we're like, yeah, of course that's a red flag. You know, oh, they won't let you sleep because they're screaming at you all night. Oh, they're hiding money all the time. Oh, you never know where they are. Like, do we really, you know, it's kind of, oh, wow, that's a red flag. Because people say, oh, you know, I need a list of red flags to watch out for. And it's like, I've heard things as crazy as they told me to remake the sandwich, but it's about control. Can't put I don't like my sandwich on a red flag list, but in that scenario it was a red flag. Okay. So what I think about is the phrase, that's weird. Okay.
Yeah,
you notice something's a little off, and you hear people like talking about other toxic relationships, man, that's kind of weird, they seems weird they never do this, seems weird they always do this, seems weird that's happening. Seems weird they didn't treat me the same way that people usually treat me. Seems weird they try to keep that a secret. It seems weird. And if that one phrase, if you trust it, will be your red flag detector. What happens is we then want to fill in all the blanks. Okay, that's weird. Why? Well, we'll probably need 2 more years of research to know exactly why. Maybe 10 years of research to know why. Then they've already destroyed your family. You've already got a business destroyed. You've already gave your kid to the wrong neighbor. That's weird. But you have to trust it. And it takes, we talk about that personal integrity and leading by example. It takes a lot of integrity within myself. I'm sure I'm not perfect at it. But it takes a lot of integrity to say that's weird and I'm going to believe that. Not go into overthinking, not try to analyze that person, not try to whatever, but that's weird. That's also weird. That's also weird. Now there's a pattern of that's weird. And you can give them 2 or 3 years of your life. That is a choice. But Bill Eddy wrote a book called The 5 Types of People Who Will Ruin Your Life or Destroy Your Life. I can't remember. That's what toxic people do. So by the time you fill in all those blanks, you're going to be in real trouble.
Yeah. I really like the way you put that with, you know, just that sort of that's weird detector and just being aware of that and then having the self-confidence to trust your instincts and, like you said, not constantly giving the other person the benefit of your doubt if it's a constant pattern, because like you said, that's what stretches into 2, 3, 4 years and can ruin so much of our lives.
And we need to move away from the conversation of nice. I probably need to move away from this window. Good grief. We're talking about the sun kept changing. Within the context of moving away from nice and moving into wise. Okay. And it's nice to give everyone the benefit of the doubt. It's nice to just assume the best in people, right? Every day people say I changed their lives. I'm not talking about turning into a bitch. I'm just saying some people are good for me. Some people are not good for me. It is up to me to determine the difference. It's immaturity to say, well, you know, I'm just going to trust everybody until they prove me wrong. That's immaturity. It's not wanting to be discerning and not wanting to do the work of your own life.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm wondering, just before we round up today, is there anything else you'd like to say about the work that you do, or and how people can get in touch with you, or how they can find out more about you?
Well, absolutely. So definitely check out my podcast, Toxic Person Proof. February 2021, I will be releasing my book, Toxic Person Proof. Pretty easy. And I help people become toxic person proof, right? Which is a whole lot more than just red flags, red flag list and that sort of thing, or codependency or self-esteem. It's a whole thing. I run the Facebook group, Finding Love and Success After a Toxic Relationship. And you can also check out my website at Sarah K. Ramsey. I do work with people in groups and privately, and I collect the best women in the world. And I really believe that women who've had their kindness used against them. I definitely think it can happen to men too. And I have some dear friends that have been in absolutely toxic relationships. I just happen to work with women at this time, December 2020. So by the time you hear this later, I may expand. But right now I've got lots of women that I'm changing their lives. And my real goal is to give children back their mothers. And mothers back their daughters. Because after a toxic relationship, you feel like a wreck. You seem to be crazy. You seem unsettled. You seem a mess. And our daughters need us. Our sons need us. Our workplace needs us. Our future spouse needs us. Future generations need us. And we need us to lead by example and have this vibrant life and say, what? You were in a toxic relationship? I never would have thought. I never would have expected. And that can turn into a conversation. That's because it can happen to people you would never expect. That's why we have to watch out for it. That's why we have to teach our kids better than what we were taught.
Yeah, and thank you so much. And I think that's just amazing advice. And it's been really wonderful speaking to you today. And thank you so much for being on this episode. And, you know, I wish you all the best with your book and everything that you're doing. And again, it's just really wonderful to speak with you. Thank you. Thanks again.
Thank you. And you guys will have to check out Tom on my podcast, The Toxic Person Proof. We talked about attachment styles and all that kind of stuff. So you'll have to check out that as well.
Thanks again.
Thanks.
Bye.